WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or Star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Soundbites for Saturday, the 13th of April, Anno Domini 2002. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we have Rob Linton on the buttons over there, kind of semi-smiling in his own odd little way. And we'll be taking your phone calls at the numbers you just heard to talk about computers. So give us a call now at 222-1180 in the 585 area code. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180. And if you are a Verizon wireless customer, it's star 1180. And before we get to those phone calls, remember, call early, call often, because once these lines fill up, they fill up.
That's it. There's only so many.
There's only so many, and there's only one Rob Linton, ladies and gentlemen. And before we do that, we'll start with the news, and we'll go to, I think, Steve first, just to annoy him. Did you just start the recording?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
We've actually got a couple of stories coming out of Microsoft this week. As some of you might remember, about 5 years ago, Microsoft and Apple entered into a technology sharing agreement where Microsoft committed to writing software for the Mac. They also invested $150 million in non-voting stock. I forget what that's worth today, but with the stock market crashes of the time.
$1.1080.
$1.1080, right. There was also rumors that they invested, they also gave Apple another $150 million to settle out any of these copyright issues, but that was never made public, just long-standing rumors. Well, that five-year agreement is up, and so a lot of people have been speculating that maybe Microsoft is going to get out of the Mac market, but Kevin Brown, the business manager of the Microsoft Macintosh business unit, is saying that they're more committed than ever, and in fact, they existed before this agreement came out anyway. Office 10 for OS 10 is a big hit, works very seamlessly in OS 10 with all the neat OS 10 interfaces. So we should be seeing more and more Microsoft products coming out for OS X. Then the most immediate one due sometime by the end of next week, they're saying, is Service Pack 1 for Office 10, containing over 1,000 tweaks, bug fixes, new features, little things like that. So that's very exciting. The other interesting news is that to add to the confusion, Microsoft is backing one of the rewritable DVD formats. DVD currently stores 4.7 gigs per disk, which is a lot compared to the CDs. The trouble is that there's a couple of different competing standards.
Like four.
The most common one is the DVD-ROM, which is how movies are made. You write to the disk, and that's the end of it. You watch the movie when you're done. You can also be used for data mode for 4.7 gigs of data. There's two rewritable standards, the plus RW and the minus RW. The minus RW is very similar to the CD minus RW, where you write on the disk when you're done, you can erase it and write onto it again, which is nice but a little annoying. The plus RW function lets you randomly rewrite on the fly, just like you do with a hard drive or floppy drive. It's harder to do. You need different kinds of lasers for the plus RW. And it's less compatible with other formats and other DVD drives. So right now there's two major camps, one pushing the plus RW, which is HP and Dell and now Microsoft, and the other camp is the minus RW, which is Apple and Compaq. So it's going to be interesting to see which one wins and what we're hoping.
Whoever builds the biggest bomb.
Right.
Well, the point is Microsoft's going to put it in their operating system.
Right.
So, you know, and yes, it's going to cost you more for the player, and it's going to cost you. It's going to be incompatible with everybody else.
Currently, about $500 for the players.
Right.
We're hoping that someone's going to make
For
the writers. Thank you. We're hoping someone's going to make a combo drive that does all the formats, and that will be even more expensive. But
exactly.
It doesn't matter whose disc you get; you can read it.
Right. Excellent, Dave. What else is going on?
Wake up. Well, you folks, if you're running Windows 2000, you've been waiting for the USB 2.0 drivers. You're still waiting, and who knows how much longer. Two companies, Little White Dog and Digital Science, had their the drivers up there, but a little prematurely. Microsoft found out about this. They wound up going to where these drivers were posted and told them, yank it, because they have a lawsuit going against this company for prematurely getting these drivers out there. They are beta, but, you know, Microsoft, like everything else, keeps promising and promising and promising. The one thing they don't seem to be short on is the lack of lawyers to sit there and go after these suits, because the tagline is,
if you can't innovate, litigate.
Yeah, really. You know, they were wondering, the big question is, I'm curious, exactly how many lawyers does it take to write a USB driver? Their answer? Soon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you folks are waiting for it, you know, and if you've gotten one of these new motherboards, and it's got the built-in USB, PS2, and you're looking for the updates, wrong. You got to you're going to have to go with another operating system,
exactly.
Like XP.
And that's the whole point, isn't it? Microsoft doesn't make money if you get USB drivers for Windows 2000.
Bingo.
They only make money if you upgrade Windows 2000 to XP, because you can't get drivers.
So I'm wondering if there's going to be maybe a little cross litigation here, or counter litigation, stating that, you know, well, wait a minute, it's a ploy to sit there and force folks to go to a new OS, which is, like you said, more Microsoft's benefit than to come out with drivers for the previous operating system.
It's actually quite surprising they're still selling 2000 and XP, because they sort of compete with each other.
Well, they've got a life that they promised they would, you know, they'd get more lawsuits if they just dumped it.
And they've got to get rid of what's left on the shelves.
That's
Gateway and Dell are both still trying to push Windows 2000 over XP.
And Microsoft has support contracts with those companies, and they have to support it for a certain amount of time. Anyway, for those of you, one last thing. For those of you who are Yahoo customers.
Yahoo!
You may have heard this already, but what's interesting is that they have a privacy policy, and then they have a series of newsletter or spam, you might call them, if you don't want them, that you can opt into. They have recently changed their privacy policy. You may not have heard about this yet. They can change it simply by, well, changing it. Now, part of the privacy policy that you agree to when you sign on for a Yahoo account, for example, for Yahoo Instant Messenger, is that you will abide by whatever privacy policy they happen to have up today. And they have changed it. They have also changed your account information to include marketing preferences. These marketing preferences are essentially partners of Yahoo's, and what you're saying is you will or will not allow them to send you spam. Excuse me, email, newsletters. I guess
spam.
If you don't want them, they're spam, and if you do, they're not, and that's the definition. But here's the problem. When they instituted these marketing preferences, they set all of the choices to yes.
Are you surprised?
No, I am not. But they have set all the choices to yes. So if you have a Yahoo account, you have automatically said yes to getting all kinds of email from these people. What you need to do is to go to yahoo.com, log into your account, go to the marketing preferences. And by the way, there's three levels of those marketing preferences, so make sure you go everywhere and select or unselect all the ones you don't want to get, which in my case was all of them. Thank you so much. But those are the things that you have to do. Yahoo has, there's a Freudian slurp if I ever heard one. Yahoo has decided that that you want the marketing literature, and if you don't, you have to go and actively make that choice. And so if you are a Yahoo user, go there now. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with your phone calls on the galaxy's longest-running computer call-in talk show, Soundbites, on 1180 WHAM. I'm glad you can understand it. Half the time, we don't even understand it. And who are we? Well, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And that's Rob Linton on the buttons, and we're taking your calls right now. And as a matter of fact, we are actually going to speak to Victor from Rochester. Can you believe it? Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Huh? Hi, guys. I ran Norton Wind Doctor, and I came up with two invalid shortcuts. It says the icon TABLE /TS.ICO cannot be used. The file might be deleted, or the DLL might be corrupt. Any idea what that is, and is it something I should be concerned with?
Well, the real problem is that backslash, it's one of two things here, Victor. Either that backslash got in there accidentally, See, the backslash character denotes a new subdirectory.
Yeah.
So it's illegal in a file name. Okay. Alternately, Norton WinDoctor can be translating the tab character, which is often delineated as backslash T. In fact, that doesn't matter either, since that's also illegal. The only thing
for a file name.
For a file name, you can't have a tab in a file name. So the only thing you can do at this point is to delete it. Now, you can't delete it just by typing table backslash T as dot ICO. So what you have to do is say del. You have to go into the right directory first, of course.
Do a search.
Right. And then once you're in that directory, say del space tab star dot ICO.
Well, if he does
the first thing to do is to do a dir space tab star dot ICO. And then see how many things come up. And if it's more than one, now you've got to do some renaming of the other ones before you can delete this thing.
Wouldn't you see it in Windows Explorer if you turn your invisibles on?
Maybe, but you still may not be able to delete it because in the long run, that uses Windows commands to do the deleting.
Well, the search, if he does a search on it, it'll find all incidences of that ts.ico.
Right.
From the start, go to start programs and do a search.
Right.
That'll find all. It'll even allow him to rename it there.
Right.
Maybe.
You'll need to turn on show hidden files because ICO is an icon file. That's the little file that makes the icons. And apparently one of them got damaged. And since it's normally a hidden file, you have to turn those on to see that name.
Okay. Thank you very much.
There you go.
Goodbye.
Thank you. I wonder what program created that. That's kind of interesting.
Yes, yeah.
Our next caller is Steve from Henrietta. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Yeah, hi, Nick. This is for Steve, this question.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I had asked it, I had asked it Wednesday, but I missed some of it. By the way, I want to make a shameless plug for the apple cider meetings. They're very interesting.
Yes, for all of you Mac users, the Apple Cider Users Group meets the second Wednesday of every month at East High School.
In Rochester, New York.
In Rochester, New York. And in fact...
So for those hearing us in Toronto, this is uninteresting.
Well, I'll drive down.
Yeah.
In fact, the beginners meeting for Apple Cider is being held almost as we speak. That starts about 2 o'clock today in Webster. And there's more information on our website at applecider.org.
Yeah, they're really great.
I happen to be president this year, so I'm sort of...
Yay!
They conned me into it again. Nick has been president in the past.
Yes, I have.
So we got to get Dave, too.
That's right. I want you to know that I am the only guy in history to be nominated for president of Frog, PC Cubed, and Apple Cider. And at the time, I was only a member of Frog, but I was nominated for all three.
Same
year, right.
They are great meetings.
Yeah.
Thank you. What can we do for you?
I have an installation disk,
mm-hmm.
and usually when I open it up, I get a README and a software agreement on some of them.
Yeah.
I want to know how I can read the files on the installation disk without installing them.
Sometimes you can't. In fact, usually you can't.
Okay.
If you open the CD icon up itself without actually running the install program, you may be able to see the other files on that disk. Quite often they're scrolled out of view because it's not something you should muck about with if you don't know what you're doing. You may need to go to view by list to see the rest of the files.
Is that a Mac term?
To muck about. That's for our Canadian listeners, to muck about.
Or down under.
Yeah. Quite often, the installer files are compressed so they fit on the disk easier, usually with StuffIt. So if you have StuffIt Deluxe, you can examine the compressed file without decompressing it to see what's in the file. Or quite often, it's an Apple installer program which uses Tomes. And there's a tome viewer, T-O-M-E, that you can find on the Internet to look inside of a tome without actually installing the program.
Yeah, I can uncompress it using StuffIt, put it on my desktop, but I can't the only thing I can do with this particular one is just README and software agreement.
Right, because you have to run the installer, so it puts the files in the proper directories for you.
And right.
It may need to put something in your system folder.
Right, I want to be able to look at those files without installing them.
So you have
Hacks editor.
Yeah, you'd see the code, but you wouldn't
see... There's no easy way to see or run the programs without installing the program.
May also be invisible, and that's why you can't find them on the disk.
I see.
The installer may open the invisible file to finish installing, So you'd need some program like File Buddy or Norton Disk Editor let you see invisible files.
Yeah, I see. Oh, listen, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you so much. Our next caller is Mike from Williamson. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hi. Hi there. Good show. I even listen to you guys when it's not raining.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that.
I wonder if the rain affects our signal, doesn't it?
Yes, I'm sure it does.
I've installed new Norton antivirus. Mm-hmm. I had it before. I just got the latest, the 2002. And it comes up and it says, unable to find email server, please verify server information in your account properties. This is in Office Outlook XP, not the Express, but the full version.
One of the things that Norton Antivirus can do is scan your email as it comes in and goes out. Do you have Office set up to run email?
Yes.
I'm sorry, are you getting this error message in Norton or are you getting it in Office?
In Outlook, in Office.
So it ran before you installed Norton?
Yes, it ran with the old version of Norton.
Now you install the new version, which runs fine by itself, but when you open up Outlook, you get this error message.
Yes.
Did you install the Norton Firewall program?
And all that other stuff.
It depends on which package you bought. If you got SystemWorks or if you got Internet Security or you just got antivirus.
No, I get the SystemWorks.
Yeah.
There you go.
Part of SystemWorks is a firewall that prevents access to the Internet unless you tell it to. And apparently Outlook is not allowed to see the Internet, so it can't find your mail server.
That, by the way, is a feature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you've got to go into the firewall itself, which is one of the pieces of the Norton SystemWorks.
Oh, wait a minute. He also said he's running Windows XP, and if he's got the built-in firewall with XP...
No, that lets Outlook through. No, that doesn't get... It's only a firewall non-Microsoft products.
What I'm saying, though, is if he's running two firewalls...
That could be an issue.
Well, that could certainly be an issue. But you really don't need both if you're running XP. But if you are going to run both, you've probably got to go in and tell it that it's okay to run Outlook and let it go to the Internet.
Okay, and it would be a feature within the Norton setup or installation.
Right, you should see it as part of the Norton setup or preferences or whatever they call it.
Okay.
One of the choices should be your firewall.
And does it make sense that everything else does work, the Internet Explorer?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
What it's supposed to do is when you launch an Internet program, a little window's supposed to pop up and say, hey, Outlook wants to access the Internet, should I let it? And perhaps somewhere along the way you said no or someone else at your computer said no.
Mm-hmm. Or when you set it up, you said maximum security.
Okay. Boy, I'm glad I called you because I'd have been forever looking for that one.
Sure, there you go.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. We're going to take a quick break now and bask on our laurels, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites. Only on 1180 WHAM. Why did that sound like one of those bad 70s?
It was Chips.
I like that.
Yeah, all right. Here we are. We're back. It's sound bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And Rob Linton is on the buttons. And look, on the phone, it's Rick from West Henrietta. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
Hey, how you doing, guys? I got two questions for you.
Yeah, sure.
First question is, I want to know how you can record audio tapes onto your CD.
Well, here we go. This is important to Dave.
And I'm actually doing it right at the moment here. I have a patch cord plugged into the headphone jack.
I purchased one of those cords that you plug into your in and then into your out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. That's the only thing I know so far.
Well, basically, that's the first part of it.
That's the big part.
You need the hardware interface. So from your tape deck, you need to find what output jacks it has.
Okay.
And then on your computer, you have to find what input jacks it has. The computer is usually a mini stereo, eighth-inch jack. The tape decks are often the left and right RCA composite jacks. Or you can use a headphone jack. Usually the headphone jack is a mic level, which is a lower volume, and the RCA jacks are line level, which is a higher volume. So you have to match your line level output with the line level input. Most of the sound cards will have mic level in and line level in.
Okay, I purchased... Do you know anything about MP3 Gold? MP3 Maker Gold? 2.0, because
I know of the program. It's not what I use, but okay.
Can you use that for that in that instance? Is that a program that you'd be able to use?
You need a recording program, and then the recording program usually saves as an AIFF, which is a standard sound file, or a WAV, which is a Windows sound file. you have to look in the MP3 Maker instructions to see if it's just a converter or if it also does recording.
There's plenty of recorders up on the web.
Right, and there's recorders included in both the Mac OS and Windows, Sound Recorder for Windows and Simple Sound.
Is there any sites that you could go to, any free sites?
Download.com, probably.
Or Google.
Or Google and do a search for audio recording, Windows recording, something like that.
And then that would actually bring something up for me to use for that?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
But I've been recording the show now. I've got 27 minutes of audio recorded here as an AIFF, and I'm up to 23 megabytes. Because audio is such a large format, you end up with a very big file, so you need to have plenty of disk space. Some of the audio recording software only goes to memory, which is faster. Some of it will go to disk, which gives you more recording time, so you may have to change that as well.
Now, when you're recording to the CD, do you do that in your hard drive?
Well, you don't
CD
actually,
or your CDR?
Yeah, you can't record directly to the CD.
It's not a good idea to, at least.
Right.
Yeah, the CDs usually aren't fast enough. You record the file onto your hard drive, and then burn that file onto the CD like you would a normal file. And it depends on what type of CD you want. If you want to make an audio CD, then it has to be an AIFF, and you're limited to 74 minutes on one audio CD. If you want to make an MP3 CD, MP3 is an audio compression format that makes the audio file smaller by throwing away information it doesn't think you'll miss. So you can get a very, very small file. In fact, the show last week I recorded was 500 megabytes as a AIFF, and MP3 got it down to 2 megabytes.
Mm-hmm.
So really good compression on MP3. There's typically a slider choice between high-quality audio, which is a large file size, or a small file size, which is lower-quality audio. And those are all software controls in the recording software you get.
Would a CD creator program do that?
No, you need a separate program to do the recording.
Oh, okay.
Once you've recorded it, then CD creator will put it on the CD.
Now, Toast on the Mac, which comes from Roxio, has a program called Spin Doctor, which does specifically audio recording from albums and cassettes. Does the PC version Easy CD Creator have something similar?
You can rip.
Yeah, you can rip.
See, there's three different things going on here. One is a recorder. Well, excuse me. One is the piece that makes a CD. The second is a piece that rips other CDs, pulls the music off them onto your hard drive. And the third piece is the recorder of audio that doesn't come from a CD.
Okay.
What you want is that third piece, the recorder, which is separate. Once you have that, then you can put it on the CD.
Now that's kind of nice.
Okay.
Included in the Mac version, but not in the PC.
And my last question, and I'll hang up, I'll let you guys answer, is how do you delete all your history and your computer? That's what I wanted to know, and then I'll hang up and let you guys answer that for me. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
Well, it depends on the type of history he's talking about. If you're talking about your Internet history, you can go into Internet Explorer and delete the temporary Internet files.
Or in your browser settings, either IE or Netscape, there's a setting for how much history to keep, 5 days, 10 days.
Zero.
Or 0 days. And then there's usually a delete files button as well.
Exactly. Okay. Our next caller, Dave from Greece. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I appreciate your program. It's been quite enlightening.
Thank you.
Two questions. First of all, to answer the previous guys, the Adaptec Easy CD Creator Deluxe does come with the Spin Doctor for the PC side.
Right.
And but I've recorded final onto WAV and MPG file.
Right. I just found that, too. The Deluxe version does. A lot of the CD writers are bundled with the OEM Lite version that may not have that.
Okay.
Well, that was that one. The two questions I have is, I have just installed a Windows XP on my wife's system, and it came with Internet Explorer 6, and I have Office 97. I tried to use Office 97 spell check function for Outlook Express, and it says that there's no spell checker.
Right. It requires a newer version. You see, there's only one spell checker from Microsoft, and in fact, they come from the Office suite uses the same one. So when you installed Office 97, that's the one that went on, and now the Outlook Express cannot find it because it assumes 2000 or better. They changed the format.
Mm-hmm.
There's really kind of no way around that without I don't think,
least I've never found the spell checking software separately.
No, he's going to upgrade to
downgrade Outlook or upgrade Office.
Right, those are your two choices.
Yeah, because my
or learn to spell better.
There are third-party spell checkers you can buy, but
go onto your own machine.
Yeah, I run an Office or a Windows 2000, and its Explorer 6 works fine with it.
Sure. Yeah.
But the XP apparently didn't.
No, it won't.
Okay.
Well, it's Office. Yes, because it's the newer version of Outlook Express.
Right. Okay. The main question I called about is I have ATI All-in-Wonder Radeon video board, and I'm trying to record like TV shows onto an MPG or MP2 format, and it'll let me record in an MP2 format, but every time I try to go play it, it says can't open file an MP2 file.
Does it work with MPG?
Yep. If I say it's an MP1, MPG 1 format, it works fine.
Then one of two things is happening. Either the recording software is not recording correctly, or you don't have the right playback codec for that version of the MP2.
Where would I get a codec for that, then?
You'd think it would have come from the ATI disk, but it might be up on the website.
Okay.
There probably might be an update. The version ATI.
Exactly. There may be a bug, and they fixed it. The first thing you should do is look at the ATI website.
Yeah, and I grabbed all the drivers I saw, but maybe there's some special plugin.
Well, you got to look for both the video card drivers and for the update of the software itself.
It's also possible that MPEG-2 is the standard for DVD playback. Can your video card play DVDs?
I don't have a DVD player, so I've never tried it.
That
in the built-in.
Right,
PC.
You may not have the DVD.
So that might be what's happening. It's recording the DVD format, but since you don't have DVD player, DVD decoders, it won't play it for you.
Okay.
Which is silly, but it could happen.
Could be the way it works.
Yeah, I'm trying to convert some of these to like a video CD. Like I want to turn around and take a lot of my videos and the old.
Right.
Super 8 movies that we made when we were first married and put them all onto a DVD
right.
So we could, you know, retain it for a longer period of time than some of those medias
right.
are handling now.
Try one of the DVD player softwares. InterVideo and a couple of others have DVD player software.
Like a soft version of a decoder?
Yeah, ATI
exactly.
itself does on their,
so does
their other cards that support DVD playback.
Right. That's the only thing I can suggest at this point.
What's the function of, in setting up the Capture Wizard, I can also select deinterlacing and visual masking?
You know what? We really don't have time for that. I'm sorry. I'd love to answer all of your questions for the whole rest of the 2 hours.
But we got a lot of other folks that would like to get questions.
That's a very long answer. I can't do it simply. I'm sure there are people who can.
A big difference is the way televisions display data and the way computers display data.
Right. But we are going to have to take a break, and I am terribly sorry. We've got to go take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco on America's sometimes longer than other running radio shows. Sound bites on 1180 WHAM. It's true. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Good one. That's a good one. Yeah.
Not bad. And you are listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. All of that is true. And we will be going back to the phones in but a moment. But before we do that, I would like to talk about our website. If you go to wham1180.com, go past the splash page to the, and by the way, happy 80th anniversary,
yes.
Wham. And go to the main
anyone
page and go down to the lower left.
Has anyone been here for the whole 80 years?
I think all of them. well, that's our last week on the air.
Jeff will be calling next.
and that'll take you to our page, soundbites.org, and you will find there a poll. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll, we want to thank Stephen F., one of the folks in the forums, and we'll talk about the forums in a moment. Stephen F. gave us a poll idea, which we used. Please, for God's sake, if you have a poll idea, send it to me. Pollideas@soundbites.org. We need them desperately. And the question was, I participate in Soundbites polls. And the winner was frequently with 38% of the vote, always with 28% of the vote, seldom with 19% of the vote, and I'm not sure what this means, but never got 16% of the vote. 36 of you never participate in the polls, except, I guess, this one. For a total of 229 votes, we want to thank you all very much.
Well, then aren't they lying right off the bat, then?
Yeah, so that's why it's a little it's kind of confusing that they even bothered to answer that one. And this week's poll comes from the fact that I was listening to the news and they're talking about raising the postal rates to 37 cents in what, June?
June 30th.
June 30th. And I was thinking, yeah, so what? I don't recall the last time I mailed a letter that wasn't a bill. And I thought, what an interesting poll that would make. And so here it is, this week's poll at soundbites.org. When was the last time you mailed a physical letter, not a bill? The choices are this week, last month, earlier this year, last year, and,
can't remember.
Because you don't remember. And so far, we have 57 people who have voted in the poll. Please do that. And you can also, while you're there, join the Soundbites Forum. We have a bunch of forums online. We talk about the Mac and the PCs and Linux and dang near everything you could possibly be interested in. And we'd have all kinds of stuff. You can ask questions. Dave and Steve and I don't always answer your questions, but all kinds of other experts are online to do that. So if you can't get enough Soundbites on Saturday, thank God there's the forums. And when you do sign up, please tell us what city you're from. We're kind of keeping track of who's coming from where, so we know how well we're doing. And we'd love to have you join the forums, and we'd love to have you join in the poll. So far, as I said, today there are 58 votes in the poll, and there are 669 registered users in the forum, the last one being Slappy Pappy 14420. Okay, but we're going to go back to the phone.
Wait,
oh, yeah.
One other thing, though, we should put a plug for, though, is for you folks that are active members of the forums, we are putting together, more or less doing a fundraiser right now, trying to bag and raise some money to get the server up for the archives. We have been receiving donations, and if you would like to donate to get the Soundbites server up, we're accepting donations. Send
the archive server so that we can stream audio and you can download last week's show and all kinds of good stuff.
Put all the old shows back up there for you to listen later on when you think you missed something and want to refer back to it. We are accepting donations. If you would, send them to me, Dave Enright, at Enright PC Management, 3385 Brighton Henry, the Town Line Road. And we will make sure that everybody that does donate does get credit
On the new website.
On the new website.
And the old website.
A little plaque or something.
A little, you'll be immortalized.
We've got some ideas. Yeah.
And definitely, by the way, that's checks or money orders only.
Correct.
Because if you pay by credit card, it comes out of Dave's company's bill, so that's not a good thing. We're going to go back to the phones now, and we are going to talk to Lynn from Avon. Welcome, Lynn. What's your question?
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I have a Hewlett-Packard 6630 running Windows 98 Second Edition.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran the recovery disk, and after we ran the recovery disk, we could no longer connect to our internet service provider. It would just freeze, and it wouldn't do anything.
Did you reconfigure your internet setup?
Yeah. Yeah, here's the deal with the recovery disk.
Right.
When you get a system that has only a recovery disk as opposed to a real Windows disk, what happens is it resets your system to the way it was the day you bought it. Any files you put on are gone. Any settings you made are gone. Everything is gone.
Right.
So if, in fact, you had set up an internet service provider connection after you got the machine, which you kind of had to,
right,
it's gone.
Right. Well, we've been through all that, and we've reinstalled and uninstalled and this and that. I've talked to several technicians for several hours. And when I take it into the computer where I bought it and they test it, we connect just fine. I can connect to my internet service provider in Henrietta. I can't connect at my home.
Where you're in? Are you long distance?
No.
To Henrietta?
No.
I'm
and
wondering,
so then I had someone come to my house, and who's smarter about this stuff than I am, and they said, "You're right. You can't connect." And he took it to his home, which is in Avon, and he can't connect from his phone or from his. Through his phone line, and I had the phone company come to the house, and they did whatever they do, and they said my phone line is fine.
For voice calls, that's all the phone company will do.
Well, they said they have some way of checking to, I don't know. They
You've got one of two problems here. Either coincidentally, something happened with the phone line that changed the way it worked, and you couldn't log on after you did that.
Right.
Or There is something you had set up in your phone that... See, I don't know. I don't live in Avon, so I don't know what the deal is.
Do you have the modem speaker turned on while you're connecting?
Yes, I can hear it dial.
You hear it dial? Do you hear the other end answer? Do you hear the other end answer? And you hear the screeching noises as the...
Yes, I hear all those regular noises that I used to hear, but then it goes on to a different noise. Now, we tried to install AOL.
The two modems aren't talking to each other anymore.
I'm wondering if there were some updates maybe to her modem.
Yeah.
That might help. If that's a soft modem, soft modems are notorious.
What internet provider are you using?
We were using Blue Light, but we also have used AOL. And we can't connect to either one.
You might want to try using a different phone number, especially AOL. There's five or six phone numbers in Rochester.
Right, yeah. I was on the phone with their techs for quite a while, and they tried to help me, but, you know, we went round and round.
So when you go into the setup and change your phone number,
you're
dialing, it still doesn't work?
Right. And it just freezes. I don't get an error message. It just, every once in a while, like when I do Control-Alt-Delete, I will get a fatal exception OE message. But most of the time, I don't even get that. It just freezes.
And you physically move the computer to somewhere else,
right,
and it works.
And it works in Henrietta at the, you know, at the computer store.
See, the fact that it works somewhere tells me that it's not hardware and it's not software. The only other thing is your phone line or your cable. Your phone, the little modem cable that goes from the back of your computer.
We bought a new one of those.
But the thing that is, though, it can be a combination of both the phone line and the modem. If she's running a soft modem, which were the ones that they used to throw in there because they are the cheaper ones, and, you know, you've got some noise on it, whereas in Henrietta, you know, and they're testing it there, they've got a better quality line, it has no problem making the connection. But once you get down to Avon, and if that's a soft modem, I've seen it have problems making the connection. It just can't do the handshake.
What phone company do you have?
Frontier.
So it's not trying to go through, well, it may be trying to go through one of the smaller companies.
It could also be that Henrietta's on a slick. Have you tried this at odd times, you know, like 3 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, when not many people are online?
Yeah, and if, like with AOL, I could get a busy signal, and it would redirect me to another number. But once that number tried to pick up, then it freezes.
I'd say look for updates to your modem driver.
That would be the place I'd start. I'd also, the problem is this is going to be one of those things where it's going to be something really simple that you've got to be sitting at the machine to see.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's why we had someone come to the house.
Right.
And to see if we just had something quirky going on. And
do you have call waiting or call ID or any of the fancy features?
No, we don't have any of that. And it worked before we ran the recovery disk. We had no problem.
Right. Well, that's what makes it sound like it could be some sort of driver update. Have you checked the manufacturer of your modem for driver updates?
No. I just took it to the shop and I said...
Yeah, see, they should have done
that. You're supposed to... You know, I'm hoping they're going to help me.
Well, part of the problem is you plug it into your phone line and it works in your shop.
Right.
You know, we can't reproduce the problem.
Right.
Right, but it could well be a... it could be a low... How many phones do you have in your house?
2.
Wrong answer.
Well, unplug one.
Yeah, unplug all the other ones.
We did that.
Yeah.
Okay. The only thing I can come to right off the top of my head is updating the drivers. I'm sorry.
Okie dokie.
I wish I could make an easy, simple, click this button kind of suggestion, but I'm afraid that's all I can come up with at the moment.
Thank you very much.
I'm looking at two very confused guys.
Yeah.
And that frightens me. So we're going to take a break while I dunk my head somewhere. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, and me, Nick, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Oh, yeah, we're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And we have the silent Rob Linton on the buttons. Rob, we're going to get you on the air one of these days, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, really? We got it.
Wrestle him to the ground and stick a microphone in his face. We're back, and we're going to be talking to Herm from Ontario, New York. Welcome, Herm. What's your question?
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
I have a G4 that the drive went bad on, and when I tried to reinstall the software to run my Epson 1520 printer, which is running on a USB cord, it doesn't work anymore. It worked fine before. Took it in, looked at it. It works fine with other USB printers, computers, but it doesn't work on mine.
You might be missing a couple of the drivers.
Yeah, it's all over the place. For the drivers, and I thought I had everything in back in again, but I must be missing one, and I can't figure out which one it is.
There were several updates to the Epson drivers, generic updates. Epson stylus update was just what it was called. 1.1 CES, I think, was the last one on Epson's website. Are you running a USB to serial adapter on this?
Well, I did. I took the adapter off, and oh yeah, right.
Right, because the 1520 is serial only, so you need to look at the drivers for the adapter as well.
Okay, that's probably what I'm missing on it.
Well, the other option, it's a little more expensive, but it works better, is the 1520 has a slot in the back of it where you can add an Ethernet card and run the printer Ethernet instead of serial USB adaptation.
And it will be faster.
Not necessarily. Epson has said their serial interfaces are about as fast as their Ethernet interfaces, but it's sometimes easier
to connect. Well, yeah, because the deal is once it gets to the printer, it's the printer that's the slowest part anyway, so
yeah.
Who cares, right?
So that's
all over the place for it, and I can't find it. So you think it's the adapter cable?
It could be the driver for your serial adapter, or it could be the secondary Epson updates, not the printer driver update.
No, I went to Epson, I got
stylus.
Downloads on the recent updates, and I didn't even install the one off the CD because I just went and got their drivers off.
Right, yeah, it's not just the driver. There's a second file you have to download, the stylus update, not just the 1520 driver.
And that's on their page? Because I looked under the drivers and there was nothing.
Yeah, it should be there. I mean, I'll check myself. But it's a stylus update 1.0 CES was the last version.
There you go. If you don't have both, it's not going to work, right?
All right.
Yeah, the driver updates fix some problems with System 9 and G4s.
Okie doke.
Okay, Nick, I just want to tell you, you sold me my first Mac.
I knew this was you. I knew it. As I was listening, I knew that was you.
Okay.
Thanks, Herm.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you. I told you guys during the break. Now, who is
it?
Our next caller is Joe from Pittsburgh. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Hello there. How are you?
Good.
Great. I've got a new Sony Vaio, and I'm running XP, and I went out and bought CD Creator 5 Platinum.
Mm-hmm.
And everything loaded, and then it takes you right to a site as well where you can get the 5.2 or whatever for XP.
Right.
Well, and before I even went there, I checked and I went, you know, and I opened up the interface, and everything seems to be normal when you look at it. But when you click on something, everything's like a question mark.
Right. You've got there, even with that version, there are two patches. You want to go to the Roxio website.
Mm-hmm.
And in that update, before you run that update, there are two patches, and you've got to read the instructions because you've got to follow the sequence that they recommend in doing those two updates before you do the actual update to the program.
Yeah, it's in the upper right corner of their main page.
It's updates to updates.
Okay, so I saw the two, and it seemed like they were video-related and picture-related, the ones below the 5.2. Is
right,
that the
because,
correct ones?
Yeah, because it can mess up the video. I had that issue with mine. When you opened up the window, you clicked on a particular file that you wanted to move to the CD,
mm-hmm.
It would make duplicates up above.
Oh,
and
wow.
Blocks, you know, it messed up the whole video system. So I would recommend going with those updates before you do the update.
The basic problem is that the CD burning software in the CD burning software in Windows XP is a subset of the Roxio Easy CD Creator.
Right.
So basically, you're running two versions of the same program. They're conflicting with each other. So you
wow.
have to get all the latest drivers from Roxio to get the Platinum version running.
Okay. So what I should do then is go to Add, Remove it. First?
No. Go to the website first and read the instructions there. It will tell you what to do.
Okay, because
follow those exactly.
Gotcha.
Because there is a procedure where I think one of them says you run this and don't restart, even though it wants to. And like I say, follow the instructions to the T. You won't have any problems.
But I shouldn't add delete first. I mean, take away.
No, correct. Go read the instructions.
Okay, great. I got one real quick little question.
It better be real quick.
It
Go
is.
Ahead.
I've got a hub, and it makes mention to a twisted pair cable or an MDIX normal cable or whatever. What is the difference?
You mean a crossover versus a straight?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Normally, if you're going to go from a PC to a hub, you want the regular twisted pair.
Straight.
It's just
cable.
Like a Cat5 cable.
It's a straight cable. Yeah. Exactly right. If you're going to go from one hub to another hub, it depends on the hub you buy as to whether you need a straight cable or a crossover.
The crossover cable lets two hubs talk to each other.
All right.
Some hubs have a switch on the back that will cross one of the ports.
Right.
So you use a straight cable in a cross port.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're going to go take a break now, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Where? Dang, I missed it again. Wait, I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And that's Rob Linton on the buttons, not talking about himself again.
We got to get that mic in front of him.
Although I gave him a moment of dead air, which you should see the panic look on his face. I've seen deer in the headlights look calmer. Our next caller, Don from Perry, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Hello, Nick, Steve, Dave. How you doing?
Good. And don't forget
Great.
Rob.
And
Rob, we're going to call him from now on.
Oh, okay. I've got an answer to this question about the guy who wants to record audio from the tape or...
Sure, Rick from West Henrietta.
There's a program called Total Recorder, and that does everything he wants to do with it. Can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Cool.
And it's at highcriteria.com, and you have to purchase the software, or else if you don't, you can only record 40 seconds of audio.
Okay.
So, yeah, well, how much is it to buy it?
I believe it's around $35 or so.
That's not bad.
Pretty cheap.
Yeah. There's also a program called Audacity.
I don't know where it is.
Maybe we've already got it up on our site, though.
I think so.
We do. Audacity, which is a free audio editor, and that's up on our website. If you go to soundbites.org, and down in the lower right-hand corner are a bunch of links, one of which is, I heard a website on your show, Ellipsis. And if you go to that page, you'll find two columns. One is by date of the show, which is completely useless for anybody except for the current show. And then on the other side is an alphabetical list. And this is called the Audacity Free Audio Editor. And that one's free. So I would suggest giving them. And then there's Cakewalk Audio Editing Tools.
Yeah.
Got a bunch of audio editing tools online.
Oh, yeah.
So give them all a try. Thank you, Don. That's excellent. I love to hear that.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. I love it when other people call in with answers. Eventually, we'll be just sitting here saying, and Nancy's talking to Fred, and Tom's talking to Joe.
And Bill answered this question for William.
Right, and we're talking to Susan from Brighton. Welcome, Susan. What's your question?
Hi. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
Good. I bought a computer about 3 months ago and had 3 months of Norton antivirus free.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I, at the same time, bought SystemWorks 2000. And I didn't install it yet because I assumed that I'd get more antivirus-free when I installed that for some period of time. I'm not sure how it works. Pardon?
You should get a year.
Okay.
When you purchase the retail box.
And I recently read on the Internet some reviews by just users that they had trouble with their hard drive after they installed SystemWorks.
Yes, they do. I've been saying that for the longest time. What you want to install off the SystemWorks drive is the disk, is the antivirus software. But all the other stuff, you can just leave where it is.
Do a custom install. When you put the CD in, it'll auto-start. And what you do is normally they'll say typical or custom. Select the custom. And then you will then be presented with the different options or programs that you can install. Just install the antivirus program. The rest of the utilities and everything else, if you need them, can be run off the CD. And you should have no problems.
Run off? Oh, I mean just
install,
when I want to use it.
Right.
Right. Just put the CD in. It'll come up. Say, I want to run this one. Go.
I can just click on the antivirus and just resubscribe also, so
correct.
I don't even need the...
Right. Yep.
So it's a matter of whether I want to use the other two things.
Six of one, half dozen of the other.
There you go.
But it is true that The people have had trouble with it, then.
Oh, yes. Quite often. Because, see, Norton wants to throw in things like crash guard and clean sweep and everything else.
They don't include the crash guard anymore. They finally got fed up with it. It caused more crashes than it prevented.
But there's a number of utilities that just fight with Windows and trying to do what Windows wants to do, especially with Windows ME, XP, and Windows 2000. It just got in the way of what the operating system was trying to do on its own. So, we tell folks to, you know, avoid that if you can.
Okay.
All right?
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks. Our next caller at Soundbites is going to be Paula from Fairport. Welcome, Paula. What's your question?
Hi, thanks. Well, first of all, that last comment was very helpful because I'm just about ready to install System Works on the computer that I'm having problems with.
Now you know what you have to do, Paula.
Yeah.
We live to serve.
Especially if you're already having problems with the computer, don't install anything. Just run the diagnostic program off the CD.
Okay. Well, here's the problem that I'm having. This is my daughter's computer that she uses at college, and she called and said her printer now is not working. And when the system comes up, it says there's a conflict input-output error 370, which is the parallel port.
Right.
When I try to delete the printer drivers and reinstall printer drivers, it gets just so far, and then it says that there's another system already using that program.
Right, in the BIOS.
Yeah, and I don't know where to go to fix it.
What you have to do is, while the machine is starting up, what you want to do is look at the screen, and normally it's the delete key or F2 to go into the BIOS.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to see this blue screen be presented to you, mm-hmm. and on one side it will say peripherals. You want to, using the up and down arrow keys, go over to that, hit enter, and check the settings for your parallel port. It will be labeled LPT1 or parallel port 1.
Mm-hmm.
And see what the settings are for it there. It might have gotten changed if, depending on the printer, whether it's set to ECP, ECPM, EPP.
But there's different kinds of parallel ports.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you're running one of the older printers, say an old DeskJet or something like that, you might want to just keep it to a bidirectional.
Okay.
Or if you're running a newer printer, you might want to go ECP.
The other thing to check is once you do get into Windows, right-click on My Computer, bring up Properties, go to the Device Manager, and there should be a couple of exclamation points on conflicting devices.
Mm-hmm.
And that may tell you what the parallel port is conflicting with. Basically, two devices are trying to grab the same address, the same thing in the computer, and can't.
Okay.
So you have to fix, turn off, or change one or the other.
Okay. The other things that are installed on that computer, there's a CD, and then there's also a CD burner, a zip drive, and then the regular floppy drive. So
they all run on different interfaces, but they could be using the same settings that the parallel port is using.
So it's any one of those that could be conflicting with.
Yes, and going into the device manager will tell you.
All right, very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next caller is John from Albion. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Yeah, hi. I've got Windows 98. And I'm trying to download using Netscape, trying to download Netscape 6.2. When I do that, I get a window that says real download, and it says a possible broken installation of real download was detected. You want to remove real download from your system now. And it stays on the hourglass, the cursor does. And if I hit yes, I do want to remove it, nothing happens. Machine freezes up.
I hate real. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I've come to hate it over the years.
Think tag.
It's supposed to make downloading faster.
Yeah.
More often, it prevents you from downloading.
And I got some SWAT plan for you, too.
Right.
What you probably need to do is to go into the Add Remove Programs. If you're lucky, it's listed there.
Go into which?
Add Remove Programs. Go to Start, Settings, Control Panel, Add Remove Programs.
How do you spell that?
Start.
No, I understand that. What program?
Add, remove,
programs. Add, remove. Okay.
Sorry. And go into add, remove programs.
Yeah, I've done that.
If you're looking.
Get rid of real download?
Right.
Yeah, I've done that. Nothing happens.
Okay.
What happened is I lost the hard drive, and when I reinstalled on the new drive, I had a whole bunch of links that didn't work.
Yeah.
And I think this was one of them. I'm not sure if that's the trouble.
What you're probably going to have to do is go to their website, the real website, real.com.
Yeah.
Download the real download.
Yeah.
Install it so that you get a good installation of it.
I've done that, too.
And then uninstall it.
I've done that. Oh, uninstall it?
Yeah.
Because some piece of it isn't working, and it's preventing files from being downloaded.
Yeah.
The second thing is, if I can ever get that straightened out.
Right.
I have Roadrunner on the machine.
Right.
And it won't work with Netscape 6.1, and it won't work with AOL 7.
It will work. Something is apparently wrong with your settings.
If I call one, they tell me it's the fault of the other.
Oh, sure.
Well, the big thing with AOL is you have to create a new type of connection, because by default, AOL wants to dial a modem.
Right. I use TCP/IP with them.
Right. And when you try to connect over TCP, what happens?
Nothing. I just don't get anything.
You should get an error.
I get a blank window.
He might want to go into his TCP/IP settings in the networking to make sure it's set to DHCP.
Right. Specify address should be turned off in your TCP properties.
Yeah.
What version of Windows are you running?
98.
All right, because there's problems with AOL and XP. You might want to try, does AOL work when you dial the phone?
I haven't tried that. I can work AOL 4. That stays connected, and I've got Netscape lower versions. They all stay connected, but the upper versions won't.
The other thing you want to do is to make sure that Netscape is not set to dial the phone, because it often does as well.
Yeah.
So you want to go into the preferences and tell it you have an always-on connection.
Okay, always-on?
Right.
Or
well,
never dial.
Never dial, essentially, yeah.
Okay.
Okey-doke?
Right. Yep.
Thank you so much. We're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Silent Rob Linton on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Yes, indeed, you are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. I am Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Rob Linton's on the buttons, and Harold is calling us all the way from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Harold. What's your question?
Oh, it's another one to do with Roxio.
Sure.
CD Creator 5.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be running Windows 98 SE, and I had an external USB port HP 8210E CD burner, and I was able to use that at 4X all the time, making copies of some CDs and stuff. And when I upgraded to XP, I couldn't get it to work until I took it out of the case, put it in internally, and now what I have to do is I have to create an image from it, and then I can burn the CD off the image, but I can't go direct from my CD-ROM into that.
What happened when you tried?
It goes through maybe about five minutes at the most, and then it just hangs right up.
And you did all the updates to XP?
I did. I had to do that, yeah, with the, you put the one in, I think it was XP update, and all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. When you stuck it internal to the box, is it IDE?
Yes, it's what's internal, what was in, it's a 8210i.
Right, so now...
8200i.
Okay, so it's internal IDE.
Yes.
Is your CD-ROM drive IDE?
Yes, it is.
Are they on the same chain? That is to say, are they connected to each other by a cable?
I'm not sure.
If they are, that's bad.
Pardon?
If they are, that's bad. Here's the deal. When you do something in IDE, only one device can be active at a time. So if you go to read from a device, it has to spin it up, read, spin it down, spin up the other device, write, spin it down, spin up the first device, read, spin it down. So if those two devices are on the same channel, the lag between them will eventually make the thing go out of sync.
Okay.
You need to make sure that the thing you are reading from and the burner you are burning to are on different chains.
So
okay, one's on the primary and one's on the secondary.
Right.
Right.
Typically put your hard drive and your CD reader on one chain and your CD writer on the other chain.
With another hard drive.
Right, that way if you're writing from the hard drive or if you're writing from the CD reader, then the writer is on its own chain.
There you go.
Okay, I'll try this.
Thank you so much.
Our next caller,
Cheryl from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Cheryl. What's your question?
Hi. I have a Dell laptop, an Inspiron 8000 that's running Windows 2000. And for whatever reason, it does not allow me to run any USB devices. I have a USB Luxmart printer and an Epson scanner.
Correct.
And neither of them work.
That's exactly right.
I have spent more time with technical support with both Dell and Lexmark and Epson, and nobody can help me.
It's never going to happen. Did you hear the beginning of our show?
The news that I did?
There are no Windows 2000 USB drivers.
And they should have told you that in the first minute of your phone call.
Dell sent out a guy to put up to give me a new motherboard and everything. It didn't help.
These people are
clueless.
I'm sorry, but they're clueless. The reality is that there are no drivers for USB for Windows 2000. Microsoft has bagged us for at least 2 years now. They just bagged us again. That was the news item we read this morning. There are not now, and most likely never will be, drivers for USB for Windows 2000.
There were some betas out there, but
there are betas out there, and there is a company that puts out their own board who has written their own drivers, but that's not going to help with an Inspiron laptop.
Well, I have these two things I bought that are no good.
The only thing you can do at this point is to upgrade to XP, which does have drivers, and what you need to do now is go find a different Dell technician, someone whom you may actually have a little bit of trust left in, and find out what you need to download in terms of drivers to get the Inspiron 8000 to work under XP. If you need to use these two devices under Windows, you cannot do it under 2000. So your choices are new devices or a new operating system.
I hate to
tell you that, but there is no other answer, and it is entirely laid at the door of Microsoft, who seems to be incapable of writing USB drivers for their own operating system.
I just found the tech note in Microsoft's knowledge base, general USB troubleshooting in Windows 2000. USB problems are caused by bad hardware, bad drivers, bad cabling, bad firmware, bad hub. Nothing about we didn't write any drivers.
They're
not
going
to work anyway.
Right.
If this is a brand new laptop, you might want to take it back to them and tell them, hey, this isn't going to happen with because there are no USB drivers. Put Windows XP on there for me instead of the Windows 2000.
Yeah, they've given you enough nonsense. They've run you around enough. It's time for them to do something nice for you.
Well, I've had the computer almost a little over a year, but I have called them. I've given up. I mean, I haven't worked on this for a while because it never helped. The products will install, and if I use it immediately, it will work. But then as soon as I turn it off, it's all gone.
Right, and that's part of the problem. Yeah, and that's the problem is it's a tease, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll work when you install it, and you think, oh, great, life is good. And then the next time it doesn't, and you assume that you did something wrong.
Well, I don't assume that anymore.
Well, right. Nor should you, Cheryl. The reality is that it has exactly zero to do with you and everything to do with the fact that Microsoft has not written USB drivers for their own operating system. And, of course, the reason they haven't done that is because if you had USB drivers for Windows 2000, you would never upgrade from 2000 to XP, and Microsoft doesn't make any money if you do that. So I'm sorry, Cheryl. I wish I had a better answer for you, but
at least I know now.
There you go.
Right, now you know. There's nothing you can do, but at least you know.
That's good.
Thank you.
That's a start. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. And now you know that we are done for another week on Soundbite. Don't forget to vote in the poll and join in the forums at www.soundbites.org. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Silent Rob Linton on the buttons.
We'll get him on the mic yet.
That's exactly right. We will. And I'm Nick Francesco. Be back here next Saturday at 12:20 or, of course, the preceding Friday at 7 o'clock on our news for 756 Talk. And we will see you next Saturday at 12:20 on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.